Guys, it's time that we build Onze Salah his statue in Atlanta for what he's done this offseason. We'll get into that and everything else on the Atlanta Sports Weekly Podcast. My name is Alex Adams. So happy to be with y'all here this week. We took last week off for 4th of July. By the way, happy 4th of July to those of y'all who celebrated. I know I did, and I had a lot of fun. Watching some fireworks with my family, but we are back and better than ever. We'll hop right into it. Timestamps are on the video, so let's get started with the national news that has happened. First and foremost, the U.S. men's national team finishing runner-up in the Gold Cup to Mexico, who won their second straight Gold Cup. First win over the United States for Mexico since 2019. That game ended 2-1. Been a little bit of a nervy Gold Cup for the men's national team for the U.S., and it ultimately came back to bite them. Controversial calls may have hurt, but nonetheless, Mexico was able to get it done while the U.S. were not. Also, the other day we had the Grand Slam, and for the first time since 1911, we actually had a sweep in the Grand Slam. So, Swiatek won the Wimbledon Grand Slam 6-0 and 2 or 6-0. Both sets took first place. Congratulations there. Other news, longtime defensive tackle Ndamukong Suh, retired. A lot of people remember him for being a slightly controversial player, we'll say, stomping on Aaron Rodgers and just a lot of dirty plays that he's done, but all in all, still a very good player in his time. After the Gold Cup, we had Malik Tillman, the U.S. men's national team star, join Leverskin from PSV. So congratulations to there. And then we also had Donovan Mitchell get engaged. He is engaged to R&B singer Coco Jones. Coco Jones, of course, the Grammy Award winner. So congratulations there. Candace Parker and Ella Mai, who was the girlfriend of Jason Tatum, were among the many couple. So congratulations to the Mitchells now. As we will hop right into it, we'll hop into some Atlanta Braves discussion. And they're actually playing right now. A little bit of a weird start time. Started at 2:10. Currently bottom of the eighth inning. Atlanta's up 6-5. They just actually took the lead as I'm recording this. They scored three runs in that eighth inning. So I will keep you guys updated there. Ronald Acuna from his new three-hole hit a home run in the first inning. Sean Murphy homered and Marcell Ozuna also homered. Other scoring for the Braves, Michael Harris scored an RBI ground out to score Ozzie Albies. Murphy's home run, a three-run shot there in the top of the eighth inning. Currently pitching, Deysbel Hernandez. It's been a little bit of a struggle for the Braves outside of yesterday and now today. We'll see what they do. Only four wins in their last 13 games, a 4-9 record. Not something you really like to see if you're a Braves fan, or since we really last talked. They lost that series to Philadelphia. They lost the series to the Angels. They got swept by the Orioles. And then in their most recent series, they also had a series loss to the Oakland Athletics. And now for the last series before the All-Star break, they are in St. Louis this weekend. Yesterday, they won by a score of 6-5, which is ironic because that's the score right now. We had De Los Santos get the win yesterday over Matthew Liberatore. Raisel Iglesias got his first save since late June. And then today it was Aaron Bummer starting and Eric Fetty opposing him. And then tomorrow is to be determined for the Braves and Sonny Gray going for the Cardinals in the final game before the All-Star break. Now for the Braves tomorrow, I believe Didier Fuentes is still on the roster, like the 28 man, which I don't understand because, not only is he 0-3, but he is completely 0-3 in his own fault. Last game, he ended up giving up 8 runs in only 1 inning, which is obviously not ideal if you are a pitcher, as it would appear to me that Didier Fuentes has a 13.85 ERA. Which means he is giving up more earned runs than innings pitched. He has 13 innings pitched, and he has a 13.85 ERA. So not a very good sign there from the young prospect of the Braves. 13 runs given, or 23 runs given up, excuse me. 20 of them earned in those 13 innings. 6 home runs allowed as well. 6 walks to 12 strikeouts. Not a viable kind of way to go about it. And the rest of the team just hasn't really been able to do much of anything around him, so it's not truthfully his fault. I think the front office kind of made a mistake there, leaving him up for so long. He's still up now. So we will see what they decide to do on that end. Just really bad baseball all around. As soon as kind of the bats start waking up, the pitching staff just falls apart. And it's contributed to this really horrible run of baseball for the Braves. 12.5 games out of first place. They're behind Miami. They're fourth in the NL East. Truthfully, it should be worse than that for the Braves. They're kind of lucky they're not 15, 20 games out. The NL East kind of has hit a slow part of the year. All the teams have, really. But, I mean, for the Braves, the hits just keep on coming. Yesterday, they placed Austin Riley on the injured list with a abdominal issue. They're saying it should only be 10 days. But the way this season is going, I mean, it could be a lot longer than that. I really just have no words to describe this team right now. Just injured and not playing up to standard. Acuña also seems to be maybe feeling some ill effects of something coming back from his injury. He was selected to the All-Star, not the All-Star game. He's starting in the All-Star game, but he was selected for the Home Run Derby, and then It also came out that he was being replaced by Matt Olson, the Braves' first baseman, who actually leads the team in home runs. But nonetheless, kind of unfortunate that we won't get to see Acuña in another home run derby. And we won't see Austin Riley until probably the first or second, until probably the second or third series after the All-Star break. Gonna need Luke Williams, Nacho Alvarez, who they just called up from AAA. Gonna need those two to kind of step up for the Braves and hold down the hot corner. We'll see what they have in store for us. And it would appear that Nacho Alvarez is 1-for-3. So he is not doing too bad. He also has... He is 1-for-3. That one hit coming back in the second inning today. And then that ground out to third and a pop out to second base. Cardinals are threatening to score again here in the eighth inning. First and second, two outs. 2-2 count on Zagisi. So we will keep a close eye on that. Now moving on to some Atlanta United talk. Really sort of the same that happened the last time we talked about this team, which I'd rather not, but here we are. Tied with DC United, who is around the same as Atlanta United in terms of table. United with 18 points. Well, Atlanta United with 18 points. DC United with 19. Some of the stats from the game. Atlanta United 60.3% possession. Not really something you see if you are tied 0-0 with the final. In fact, they had 60% of the possession, only generated 6 shots with that 60% of possession. DC United with 39.7% generated 9 shot attempts. So we can see who did better when they had possession of the ball. United with 12 fouls and 4 yellow cards. And then just more of the same. 0 corner kicks for Atlanta United, even though they had almost 2/3 of the possession. Lineups, I mentioned the other week that they should probably change from a 5-back look to a 4-back look, and apparently Ronnie Dyla heard me because he went to a 4-2-3-1. I am kidding. But they had Latte Lath back up top with Lobjanice and Almiron flanking him. Alexei Marinchuk hanging around the middle. And they had Pedro Amador, Brooks Lennon on the wings with Keelish Riley, Efrain Morales, and Luis Abram manning the middle for Atlanta United, but it ultimately was not to be. They will be getting Bartosz Schlich back today from his yellow card accumulation suspension. Going to be interesting to see how that plays out, as they also got Tristan Moyamba, another of the club's good midfielders. He came in last week. He was a substitute for Mesut Kilic. So we will see what Ronnie Dyla decides to do with those two. I would probably put Moyamba and Schleich as the defensive midfielders. And then have Lobdenise, Marinchuk, Almiron, and Latelas up top. Stian Gregersen, the center back they signed in the offseason. He has missed, like, most of the season, actually. After he sustained a quad injury, he is closing towards match fitness, reported yesterday by Adam Jasper with the Atlanta United team. We'll see when Gregersen can get back with the team. But just really uninspiring play from Atlanta United. And we'll see what they can do in their next match. Yeah, I mean, there's not really much to talk about with this team. They're not actually doing anything. They only have 1 point in their last four matches. Garth Lagerwey is also on medical leave for cancer treatment. So prayers up to the director of player acquisition for Atlanta United. Hopefully he can get better. And we'll see what the team does tonight against Toronto FC. One of the three teams actually below Atlanta United in terms of table. 4-5-11 for 17 points is Toronto FC. 4-6-10 for 18 points is Atlanta United. So now we will move on to some Atlanta Hawks talk, as the Braves game is now tied at 6 apiece. Moving on to the Atlanta Hawks. And it's really been just an unbelievable offseason if you're a Hawks fan for Antti Salla and this new look front office. I wasn't sure what they were doing after they fired Landry Fields, but it turned out to be just an absolute, like, great move by the ownership group. As they were able to land Antti Salla, and he immediately got to work with this front office and the team, picking up Kristaps Porzingis in the first move of his tenure. Not really giving up too much, really just getting off the Terrence Mann contract. Gave up Georges Niang, who they got in the DeJounte Murray trade. And they also gave up the 22nd pick in the NBA draft, which turned out to be Carter Bryant. So not really much loss there, per se. We'll see what Carter Bryant turns into for the Nets, as the Nets took on that Terrence Mann contract, so they got a first-round pick out of it. But we will see what he turns into. And then draft night came, and he made a deal with the Pelicans, who probably should not talk to the Hawks front offices anymore. After the Hawks were able to get the unprotected better swap of the Pelicans and the Bucks in next year's draft, which we've already gone over, is absolutely loaded. AJ Dispanza, AJ and Darren Peterson, Cameron Boozer, some of the top names to look out for in next year's draft with that pick. As the Bucks and Pelicans probably aren't going to be too good next season. I know the Bucks did just get Miles Turner by stretching and waving, waving and stretching, pardon me, Damian Lillard's deal. But still who's the point guard, like Kevin Porter Jr., really? That's not really something probably that Giannis wants to play with. He'll have the ball in his hands a lot more, but really, one injury to Giannis and the Bucks probably have the number one, probably have number one pick odds. The Pelicans drafted Derek Queen in that trade, who really kind of is another Zion Williamson, if I'm being honest. And then by trading back, the Hawks got Ace Newell, who is just another good, I won't say developmental. He was pretty good at Georgia, but it might take him time to adjust to NBA level. Kind of reminds me of a Onyeka Okongwu when the Hawks drafted him. Kind of a developmental big that could turn into something for the team later. He showed a little bit of a three-point shot at Georgia, so hopefully that can progress for the Hawks. The Hawks development team does a very good job of developing these players. Usually, you look at Jalen Johnson, you look at the leap that Dyson Daniels made when he came to Atlanta. You look at Zachary Richey, the number one overall pick last year. The leap he made in the second half of the season. And you really get excited for what Ace Newell could do for the Hawks down the road. And then in free agency, I mean, hilariously, I mentioned this in the last podcast, so if you haven't heard it, go check it out. But I said that they should probably get Nickeil Alexander-Walker, and pretty much 2 hours into free agency, it broke that the Hawks signed Na to a 4-year, $64 million contract, I believe. So they did end up using that $25 million trade exception that they got from the DeJounte Murray deal in that deal for Na. They ended up trading like some second round picks and in cash to the Timberwolves. That trade actually ended up being part of a larger one. Seven team trade, most teams involved in a trade in NBA history at once. Involved Kevin Durant going to Houston, as well as Clint Capela going to Houston, Na coming to Atlanta. So just really big news there. And then we also had, just after that news broke, about probably hour and a half or 2 hours after that broke, Luke Kennard was announced as signing with the Hawks on a 1-year, $11 million contract, which is very exciting for the Hawks. Last year's team really didn't have many players who could shoot the ball well. Richey was really the only one above 34%, and he wasn't even league average. So in Luke Kennard, they're actually getting the number three all-time three-point percentage in NBA history. 43.8% on his three-pointers, which I didn't even know. I mean, that's like insane. Luke Kennard. Who, right? But 44%, I mean, the catch and shoot between Trae Young and Luke Kennard is just going to be impossible to guard. And then you add KP's pick and pop to that, and it's just going to be like, just impossible because KP can step out from 30 feet plus and just nail a three pointer if healthy. So that has really been the Hawks off season. And then Summer League as well has started. The Hawks yesterday took home the first win, or in the first game of their Summer League, they won 105 to 98 over the Miami Heat. Big story of that game, Kobe Bufkin's 29 points on 6 for 16 shooting, but really trying to do his best Shai Gilgeous-Alexander impression as he went 15 for 15 from the free throw line. Also, other news, Jacob Toppin, the brother of Obi Toppin of the Pacers, double-double, 19 points, 10 boards. Asa Newell in his first NBA action, 8 points, 8 rebounds, 3 for 9 from the field, 1 for 3 from three-point land. Nikola Jurcic as well, the Hawks second-round pick last year, I believe, who was signed by the Hawks team 2 days ago, I believe now. 8 points and 3 rebounds. So, good for the Hawks as they're into their summer league play. Next match for the Hawks will be tomorrow at 3:30 p.m. against the Phoenix Suns. That will be broadcast on ESPN Plus as well as NBA TV. So we will see what comes out of that. Checking back on the Braves. They actually had second and third with one out. Ended up scoring a run there. So, bottom of the ninth, one out. The Braves are up by one run. So, we'll definitely see if they can keep that going. See who is actually pitching for the Braves right now. It is Raisel Iglesias, who pitched yesterday. Just struck out Brendan Donovan swinging, so one more out, and the Braves will have their first series win since, I don't even remember when, their first series win since June 17th through 19th against the New York Mets. That is kind of atrocious. Yeah, that's not entirely something you want to see, but maybe they are getting on the right track. Kobe Bufkin, of course, was the 15th pick in the 2023 draft. Been dealing with injuries for most of his career. This is kind of a make it or break it time for him. So we will see where that goes. Now, last but not least, moving on to the Atlanta Falcons. And the Falcons really interest me for this upcoming season. You guys all know what I think about them. I think they can be really good. And I actually asked on my Instagram, go follow me at StrikerAlex2 for the polls. What do you guys think is the ceiling and floor for the Falcons this season? As well, you can comment on this video, or you can comment on the podcast on Spotify. Got a response from that, Devin.Kupka. Maybe a 10-win season max. A 6-win season floor. And that kind of feels, the 10-win season feels a little bit low to me. I think they could be an 11-win season team. The 6-win season, if everything goes wrong, I could see that happening. If Penix isn't who we think he is, that would make a lot of sense. But even looking at the schedule, you're really going to know who this team is the first, 5 or 6 weeks of the season that they play. Because they have that early bye week in week 5, which, by the way, last season the Eagles had a week 5 bye. And we kind of know what they did. They won the Super Bowl, so not saying anything is the same or anything, but hey. Getting back into it. Start the season at home against Tampa Bay. And then they are at Minnesota and at Carolina. Then home against Washington before the bye week. Then they are home against Buffalo and at San Francisco. So I really think by about mid-October, we're really going to have a good feel for what this team kind of is. I don't think their record's going to show up very, very good because, I mean, that opening, like, season is really rough. You have four of those teams that made the playoffs last year: Tampa Bay, Minnesota, Buffalo, and Washington. I had a brain fart. So, really, the record may not show, and I could see the floor is probably two wins. Probably against Tampa and Carolina, if I had to guess. I could see them being as good as 4-2. That is if they go 2-1 against Minnesota, Buffalo, and San Francisco. If they go 2-1 against those three, they have a solid chance at being 5-1. I don't think they're going to start 6-0. But just starting like even 3-3, I would take. Because the back half of the schedule actually isn't all that horrible. Miami, New England, Indianapolis, Carolina, New Orleans, the Jets, the Seahawks, the Bucks again, the Cardinals, the Rams, and then the Saints to end the season at home. So I believe out of those like 11 teams, I think only one of those made the playoffs. I think only the Rams did, and Tampa, of course. So I think two. So really sets up for the Falcons to have a second half run. So just survive the first half for the Falcons, and then you got the rest of your season in front of you. So I could really see this team being 11-6. I don't think a 10-win season max is fair to this offensive nucleus that they have. I understand why Devin thinks that. Because that beginning is just so brutal. And it's the Falcons. They always lose games that they're supposed to win. But it just seems like this offense should be among the best in the NFL. You've got Penix at quarterback. You've got London out. You got London Mooney, Kadir Hodge, Ray McLeod out wide. You got Bijan, Tyler Algier in the backfield. Anything you get from Kyle Pitts is a plus. Anything you get from your other tight ends is a plus, and the offensive line should be great. So really, this team has no excuses as to why they shouldn't be among the top three or four in the NFC. Unless injuries, of course, happen, or Penix isn't the quarterback that we thought he was, which in that case, Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot are out the door probably before the first New Orleans game. And I saw just a few minutes ago that Braves series has gone final 7-6. So that is the series win right there. Iglesias with another clean inning. One inning, zero hits, zero walks, zero earned runs, one strikeout. So good for the Braves. And then, yeah, so just the Falcons in general should have a good season if they can just stay the course. I know training camp's coming up for the team. As I've mentioned before, the first preseason game is my birthday, so excited for that. And yeah, that's about it for this episode of Atlanta Sports Weekly. Been a joy back here talking to everybody. Once again, my name is Alex Adams, and we should be back on the Friday uploads starting again next week. So keep an eye out for that. And yeah, see y'all later. Check out the other episodes and follow me on Instagram, @StrikerAlex2. See y'all later and goodbye.